dance on the air. We're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Megan Hunter. Megan is the CEO of the High Conflict Institute in San Diego, California, which she co-founded with Bill Eddy, who developed the High Conflict Personality Theory. Megan gives keynote speeches on conflict communication and provides training on high conflict disputes to professionals around the world, including at the moment to people in Melbourne. She specialises in helping professionals learn skills to deal with challenging clients and co-workers. And previously, she was the family law specialist at the Arizona Supreme Court Administrative Office of the Courts. Megan has written other books, including Bait and Switch and Dating Radar, Why Your Brain Says Yes to the One Who Will Make Your Life Hell. And we might talk about that again, because Megan has a new book co-authored with Andrea La Rochelle called The High Conflict Co-parenting Survival Guide. Megan, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Thanks very much. I'm very happy to be with you and your audience today.
Thank you. Your co-author, Andrea, has the personal experience, having been through the conflict with a high conflict co-parent. It's really not just the courts you have to deal with when you find yourself in this situation, is it?
No, there are many stakeholders involved in the entire system, but, you know, it's that high conflict co-parent that can be so, you know, kind of difficult to manage and can really take a toll on your life.
I mean, it's interesting, that other book where which is subtitled Why Your Brain Says Yes to the One Who Will Make Your Life Hell. You must at times think, when you're talking to people, you know, why on earth did you pick this person? I mean, that's where the problem started, doesn't it? And I mean, you expect the courts and everybody else to sort out your problem later on.
Yeah, and you know, that's sort of why the Dating Radar book, which I wrote with Bill Eddy, my co-founder at High Conflict Institute, you know, that's where that came from is, you know, we'd been working in high conflict divorce for so many years. By the time a family reaches the court system and they get really entrenched in that adversarial system, it's kind of cemented in stone. And then all of the professionals that deal in the case, whether it's a parenting coordinator, a reunification therapist, a lawyer, a judge, a mediator, there's a whole lot of people involved. They're all kind of the cleanup committee at that point. So, you know, Bill and I decided, let's take a look at trying to help people, you know, avoid marrying the people who aren't capable of having a really healthy relationship. You know, and the hope was that young people would read it before they either get married, move in together, get financially entangled, or have a child together. But it really, we haven't seen a whole lot of that happening yet. Instead, it's typically people who've already been through that high conflict relationship and, you know, traversed the court system and all of that. But we're doing our best.
Your new book, it's subtitled Reclaim Your Life One Week at a Time. And it's a fascinating guide because, you know, having been through this, you, even though you mention all those professional people that seem to get involved, you still feel very much alone and unsure as to, you know, what step you should take. And, you know, if you feel if you take this step, everything's going to come unstuck and, you know, your life is going to be ruined if it's not already ruined. It's a very positive book because you give those clear guidelines as to what people should do in these situations. And, I mean, starting with that we were just talking about, I mean, in week one, no place for regrets. So you've got to look to the future, haven't you?
You do, and not beat yourself up over having made, you know, maybe not the best decision in the past because, you know, kind of back to your original question, you know, how do we get into these relationships mm-hmm. in the first place? But the thing is, you know, with this sort of high conflict personality, oftentimes they're very charming in the beginning. And it's not an intentional thing. They're not out to, you know, charm you and then make your life hell. It's just that they have a different operating system that usually starts with charm. So, you know, when you're looking to get into a relationship, you know, or you're lonely or you're, you know, you may be vulnerable, whatever, when someone comes along that's very charming and you kind of fall into that and you know, and they're good looking and you have chemistry or you think you have chemistry, it's very difficult, you know, to recognize your own blind spots and, you know, kind of see what's coming around the corner. So then when you get, once you get into this type of relationship, this high conflict relationship, you know, it can just be seriously the most taxing relationship in your life. And when you have children together, you know, as you know, it just goes on for another 20, 25, 35, 40 years, depending on the situation. So the earlier you can learn to manage, you know, kind of take care of yourself and also manage the relationship with your co-parent, you know, the better.
So when these parents caught in these high-conflict co-parenting situations, when they stop beating themselves up, what is it that you think they want? Are they able to say what it is they want to in the future?
The person who is dealing with sort of a high-conflict co-parent?
Yes. Do they come to you and say, this is what I really want?
You know, they don't, other than to say, I just want to have a normal life. I don't want to have to deal with this. Because, you know, there's suddenly a shift where you go from just sort of, you know, normal relationships to now managing a relationship. So other than that, they don't know how to sort of quantify what they need or how to get there, because it's just so, you know, when you share a child, it's extraordinarily difficult to, you know, the fear that surrounds possibly having that child turned against you or, you know, losing contact with that child, it's a terrifying situation.
Yes, I think that's the worst of it. If you can cop what the other parent is doing, but it's when the child is turned against you that there's you get that hopeless feeling.
Yeah, and it's everywhere, and it's you know, I think we hear it most often with dads, and you know, it's a very large issue in that area. But I've also had a lot of women who come to us and say, you know, my 15-year-old hasn't spoken to me in 5 years, and she lives with her dad. So it can kind of go in any different direction. But no matter what, it's hard on the kids and it's hard on the parents.
There's one summary you give at one stage, have, feel, move. I wonder if you could just take us through that a little bit as to procedure you should follow when you're caught in this situation.
I think we get stuck. It's very easy to get stuck in some pretty negative thinking. And, you know, people feel like they're kind of in a dark hole and they can't get out. So what we're trying to do with this book is to help people recognize that, number one, you need to take care of yourself through this, because it's no different than having to take care of someone else who maybe is, you know, has a disability and you know, you need to take care of them the rest of their lives or something. The carer also has to be cared for, and you as that parent have to take care of yourself. So wellness, number one. But then the have, move, feel is really recognizing that you have some pretty strong emotions, you know, with this and feelings that go with it. So we want you to identify those and, you know, really feel what you're going through. Allow yourself to feel that without blaming, right? Just recognize it. And then sort of move those emotions along. And the more you can shift those along, move those along, the healthier your brain is going to be, and you're going to feel a lot better. Your stress will come down. You know, your anxiety levels will come down. And so throughout the book, every week, it's, you know, trying to identify some new feelings and shift and move those along, and so you can just feel better.
Yeah, I suppose what came to mind when reading it was, you know, you get these instructions on a plane that if it's, you know, if it starts losing altitude, get the air mask on yourself before you start thinking about your children or other people. And I think that's very good advice. You've got to look after yourself physically, haven't you?
You do, physically, emotionally, you know, in every way, because you're exactly right. You have to be well before you can be that best parent, because these are difficult situations. And, you know, kids require a lot of things from parents. They can be quite challenging when there's not a high conflict divorce situation or co-parenting circumstance. You know, they have sicknesses and they have squabbles at school and they might have, you know, dyslexia. There's just so many things, but to add this on top of it is really huge. And often in these these situations, you have kids with stomach aches and their grades are slipping, or they're trying to be perfectionists so their parents don't get upset. So they end up with a lot of maladies, whether it's physical or emotional. And, you know, the parents will take them to doctors or different specialists. And bottom line, they're just caught in this conflict. And the parents really have to learn how to manage that, especially the one who is dealing with a high-conflict co-parent. So taking care of yourself first so that you can do all of those other things that will be required of you as just a regular parent and then as a co-parent with the high-conflict co-parent.
And I suppose I think in the worst situation where you don't get to see your child, where for whatever reason, through parental alienation or a court order or some other reason, you mightn't see your child for a couple of years with no guarantee you'll ever see them. But in that situation, it's still important, isn't it, because one day if you are reunited, you don't want to be a wreck when the child comes to see you.
Right, and those are the most tragic situations. I was just in Scotland in the past month and spoke to a group called Shared Parenting Scotland. I think they were formerly a dad's group, and now they're shared parenting. But it was many dads came to the workshops and moms, and you know, they're really at wit's end, and you can see the frustration, and you know, it just wears you down eventually. Mm-hmm. It beats you down, and when you're beaten down, you really can't be your best self. So no matter what, whether you are in the midst of co-parenting or haven't seen your child for a while, you know, don't lose hope and give up. Don't give up on you either. Take care of you.
And this is where you need this new book by Megan Hunter and Andrea LaRochelle, The High Conflict Co-Parenting Survival Guide, because it is absolutely full of tips and ideas and advice and things you can think about instead of just focusing on the dark side all the time. As I mentioned, we are speaking with Megan Hunter today, and Megan, we've reached the part of the show where we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song for the show. Would you like to tell us which one you picked and perhaps why you picked it?
All right, so I've picked September by Earth, Wind & Fire, and it's a group I did not grow up listening to, believe it or not, but when I got married to my wonderful husband, who's a father of five, and stepdad to my three kids, this is his favorite group, and this is his favorite song, and he plays it every time he gets on the treadmill, and many other times throughout the day as well. So it's in honor of my husband, Paul.
Bye.
And that was September by Earth, Wind and Fire, dedicated to her husband by our special guest today, Megan Hunter. And we're speaking about her new book, The High Conflict Co-Parenting Survival Guide, Reclaim Your Life One Week at a Time. Megan, there are lots of resources in the book, and Bill Eddy also has a comment at one stage. He talks about the Biff response in when you're dealing with emails and letters to the high conflict co-parent. I think this is wonderful advice. If people want to remember that BIF, it stands for brief, informative, friendly, and firm. I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's a good one to pick up on. And, you know, I've spent enough time in Australia now that I realize that BIF means something entirely different. But we wrote this, or Bill Eddy developed this method of responding to someone in writing. And it can be, you know, a letter, a text, an email, a social media post, whatever. But what it's meant to contain the blame, the all-or-nothing thinking, the out-of-control emotions, the venom that might be coming through, the taunting, the personal attacks. And, you know, it's easy for anyone to kind of get sucked into that responding in a negative way, in kind of a reaction way, instead of responding in a BIF way. So BIF is brief, or the B in BIF is for brief, which means just keep it very brief. You don't, number one, you can ask yourself whether you need to respond. Ask yourself, am I emotionally hooked, where I need to defend myself, or, you know, I feel like, you know, I've been attacked. If so, you know, step back and get emotionally unhooked first, and then start going through the BIF process. All right, if I need to respond, then it needs to be brief. That means I don't need to respond to everything in that email, every allegation that's made, every accusation.
Chasing every rabbit down every hole, yes.
Right, because what's happened is the other person, you know, was in sort of a negative space when they wrote that, and they probably have a very strong lack of impulse control, so they just needed to say it right now. They felt anxiety if they didn't, so they got it out very quickly through a text or an email, and now it's off their plate, and it's gone from them, and they've probably mostly forgotten about it. But now it's going to sit on your plate, and you're going to, you know, your mind's going to perseverate around and round and round about it. You know, people lose sleep over these, maybe for a week at a time. Instead, just make it brief, make it informative, meaning just stick to the straight facts. Don't, you know, spend a lot of time defending yourself or making long explanations, because that's just going to bring up a lot more difficult argument in conversation and invite further emails. And then the first F is for friendly, and that means just open it friendly and then close it friendly. You don't have to say, hi, you're my best friend. You can just say, thank you for sending me that document, or whatever the case may be. So it's just keeping it friendly so you don't stir up more animosity. And then the last F is for firm, and that means just, you know, close it instead of leaving it hanging open. And if it's a situation where you need to agree on something like a drop-off point or exchanging the children's report card or whatever the situation may be, you can close it firmly with asking the person to make a choice between two or three choices. So that's BIF in a nutshell. And I tell you what, we sell about, I don't know, 700, 800 copies of this every month, the book BIF. It works really very well. And if you're disciplined enough to want to stop the onslaught of emails and text messages, this will help you do it. Or not stop them. Let me correct myself. It's really more about containing them and not letting it rule your life. BIF will help you manage all of that instead of letting it manage you.
Yes, I think it is a question of containing and management, because you don't want to have the illusion that anything you're going to put in that letter is really going to affect the high-conflict parenter.
Right. You're not going to cure them, change them, or anything, but you can help them remain more calm, and that's really the goal.
And I wonder if there should be another rule added there, the NFB rule, No Facebook. Because,
oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. It's extraordinary the things that people will put on Facebook, not thinking that the court and the other parent and the other lawyer and everybody else is going to be watching eagerly to see what you're doing.
And that's really the kind of the key to understanding the high conflict personality is when they can't stop themselves and when they don't have insight into their behavior that, look, everyone can see this. They don't see it and they can't stop themselves.
There's so much good advice in this book. Another one I really liked was the going back to the personal welfare is, you know, when people tend to say, I won't be able to do that until something, until I've filed my defence, until I've reviewed the latest letter, until, you know, it's a good excuse, isn't it, to not do something.
Yeah, and Andrea came up with until-isms, and I thought it was brilliant because I do that myself. I can't do this or that until I get this done. And really, that just helps you delay your life and helps delay your wellness and self-care. So you've got to kind of put the until-isms aside and live your life. And it's hard. I mean, you know, especially in cases where you haven't seen your child and you can't get back in court and or your child just seems to absolutely hate and despise you, that's when you need to do more self-care. So put away the until-isms and, you know, do take care of yourself.
And another one that I found particularly challenging is you've put under the what-if situation. Now, you know, you can sit around thinking, what if the other parent is saying mean and nasty things about me? What do you do? It's soul-destroying to know, to think about that.
Yeah, that's a tough one because none of us like to be maligned and disparaged and have people thinking bad things. But what I've kind of found is most people are pretty attuned into what's really happening, even if they're misled in the beginning, and they oftentimes will become negative advocates for the high conflict parent, but after some time, they start to see the behaviors, and if you are the parent who's showing positive behaviors, they're going to see that. That eventually shines through, even when disparaging remarks are made. So that's a tough one, but it just means you need more self-care. Because if you are in a healthier state of mind, you will be able to respond instead of react to those things. Because when we're tired, we get reactionary. And reactions usually come from our right reaction side of the brain, and that's where a lot of negative emotions are contained. So that hurt and fear and anger come from that side. And instead, you want to be responding from a place of calm and contentment and peace, and that's usually on the logic problem-solving side of the brain.
I might just say this book, The High Conflict Co-parenting Survival Guide, there's more to it, really, I think, than just dealing with these high conflict co-parenting situations. I think there's a lot of really good general advice. Like there are parts where you talk about the little voice inside your head, and you talk about getting a balance, and you talk about setting boundaries, and you talk about unconditional love. All these things, I think, have really general application, and everyone should read them.
Yeah, I think so too. And Andrea came up with most of that. You know, she's really gifted at all of that. And I think, yeah, it does spread across many areas of life, and then when you're going through anything very difficult, then it means you just need to do yourself more of a favor by taking better care of yourself.
I'd thoroughly recommend this book for particularly the people who find themselves in this terrible situation of having to deal with a high conflict co-parent and not knowing which way to jump. But everyone will get something out of it. And congratulations to you, Megan, and to Andrea on producing this book, which is so timely and so useful.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate you having me on, Bill. And you know, to every parent out there who's involved in a situation like this, whether you have access to your children or not, keep up the good faith, keep doing the right thing, and, you know, sometimes it may take many years to straighten the relationship out with the child, but I've seen it happen, you know, as the child matures, they start to get some insight about what's kind of going on and, you know, just seeing those patterns themselves. So never give up hope. That would be my parting sentiment.
Yes, because oftentimes that high conflict co-parent actually has an undiagnosed mental illness, and it's left to the child to diagnose it, which is a crazy situation.
Yeah. So if anyone's listening and you haven't had children yet, just read Dating Radar first.
Great advice.
So you won't need this other book ever.
So, look, we're just about out of time, but I just wanted to say we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email, and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. So it just remains for me now to give a special thank you. Megan Hunter, thank you very much for being a guest on Dads on the Air.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for the privilege.
And we'll be back next week with another show. That's it from Dads on the Air.